On this episode of ITAV, we take a look at UCC, Unified Communications and Collaboration, how the new generation is going to impact the IT and the AV network. Also take a look at a new California law that may impact how you set up your next AV network. All that and more next on the ITAV show.
The network for the AV industry.
What are you listening to?
This
is AV.
This is AV Nation.
This is AV Nation.
This is ITAV, episode 26, recorded Monday, January 28th, 2019. Softer codec.
AV Nation is brought to you by Atlona, the go-to provider for AV signal distribution and control in corporate, higher education, and residential spaces.
This is ITAV, the monthly look at how the IT and the AV space work together from AV Nation. My name is Tim Albright. I am your host with us to discuss the topics that we are gathered for this month. First and foremost, his name is Craig Mertz, and he is from HGA. Welcome, sir.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. And second is a longtime friend of me and of this program. His name is Paul Zeely, and he is now an indispensable industry icon, much in the same vein as our buddy Bradford Ben. Welcome, sir.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
All right. First story here comes to us from AV Network. They're previewing Integrated Systems Europe, ISE 2019. By the time this post, it will be on the precipice. Actually, most of us will be either on a plane or on our way to an airport heading over to Amsterdam. But Mac Pruzik writes about the collaboration products that we're going to see in ISE 2019. Craig, as this space evolves and things like Enterprise Connect become even more and more prevalent, and ISE, Integrated Systems Europe, every year their pavilion for unified communication seems to grow every single year. What do we expect to see in this space, and what's the impact going to be on both the network as well as the integrators?
I think this is a huge growth area for the AV industry, which is coupled on the built environment where we see, you know, spaces and businesses using the built environment and spaces not as a commodity, but we're seeing the built environment become discommodified. So this type of collaboration becoming really important to businesses where they can utilize their spaces more efficiently and then also export their workers from home or export their workers from all over the place and this being driven by the collaboration software and the collaboration hardware that we're seeing in the industry and is just absolutely exploding right now. So I think there's a lot of growth there, and we're seeing a lot of the products come out partnering with the application side of it. But I think that there's a big push where we need to stay application agnostic from the hardware side, because the applications are going to continue to evolve and change, and the way that we use the applications is going to continue to evolve, but the actual hardware is going to stay in place for a number of generations on that.
Can you do me a favor? Define for me discommodified.
So from a standpoint of in the built environment where we have spaces where in buildings where we're deploying this hardware,
yeah.
In the past, you know, a space is a space, and we throw a bunch of cubes in there. We throw in some conference rooms. It's just a space where people use it. And what I think we're seeing now is the space needs to be more useful. It needs to be more driven by how do people actually use the space? What are the amenities in the space that make it useful for and more productive for employees? So from that standpoint, we're seeing more collaboration spaces. We're seeing more huddle rooms. We're seeing more breakout spaces where people are, the built environment is focused on productive, the people using it being more productive. So it's not just an office space isn't just plain office space anymore. It's geared specifically towards how can we make this productive from a work standpoint.
Yeah, absolutely. Mr. Zeely, you were involved with a number of projects in the last few years at some of your former employers. What do you see in this space as, again, you know, specifically from a square meters standpoint at ISC specifically, that pavilion seems to grow every year?
Yeah, well, there's a couple of things in a land grab. And, you know, there's an initial issue for me that goes back years and years and years back into my unified communications and video conferencing days of what is collaboration. And it's really interesting here because they have all these things lumped as collaboration products, and there's a very apples to oranges. There's the environment agnostic AV interfaces that efficiently couple a small room to software. So your USB camera speakerphone combinations, or as well as these collaborative environments, which are designed to be touched and multiple people and going through within the same room. So in a lot of places, it's really growing just because anything that becomes some sort of workflow automation becomes collaboration or remote. We're seeing the biggest growth due to the expansion out of, and I don't know if it's shrinking of, the traditional appliance video conference space. So where you had your Cisco Polycom, Tamberg, life size world out there, but that was not a super democratic, you know, area because it was purpose-built rooms, and for years, it really was who you're going to call. So you build out an infrastructure. Now, because of the computer, people can call everywhere because there's lots of different software, and now they're discovering that the issue that really happens is none of these software applications are really well designed for multiple people. You see, I'm wearing a headset and I have a microphone. And the real reason behind all of that is that computers don't have really good echo cancellation in them. And what everyone missed about the Pixartel Polycom life size world was they were providing that echo cancellation that doesn't really work if I'm going to just try to huddle three people around my laptop with a laptop camera. So there's this middle space that has to be addressed that's in there because people now like these tools, but I don't know how many times I've been in a meeting with three of the attendees within 50 feet of me because it's easier for everybody just to call in from their desk because of the lack of all this. So that's where you're going to see it go. And Craig is completely correct about that segment of the business is got to be agnostic, because even today, you know, on my computer, on any given week, I've got meetings in Skype, Zoom, WebEx, all of these other things, and I'm using the same infrastructure. So it's going to be really interesting to see how everybody addresses that space and if they can keep it from becoming a commodity, because you're starting to see a lot of things essentially that look like a soundbar with a camera in it. And where does the value add come with that just keeps it from diving? Because among the things you see when Logitech jumps in the game, companies like ClearOne and Barco and those sorts of things who are used to high margin, low volume, don't necessarily continue to win, especially when we're talking from an AV industry standpoint, is how is the traditional AV channel and practitioners staying in this, or is this just an IT sale that gets plugged into a room and they're showing it here, but ultimately anybody can hang a display on a wall and stick a soundbar under it.
I think you're absolutely right that everything needs to be agnostic, and on the networking side too, I think these AV solutions are going to continue to grow, it not just from an AV solution or from a collaborate, from that traditional video teleconferencing solution, but they're, we're going to incorporate Slack, we're going to incorporate all of these productivity applications into them. And we keep seeing right now these generally agnostic, hardware manufacturers continue to partner up with the application. So it kind of, in some cases, it looks a little bit like that legacy video teleconference solution, but they still want to be agnostic. So there's a lot of back and forth, I think, in the industry where people are still trying to figure out, there's that churn where the manufacturer is still trying to figure out how are they going to come to market and how are they going to differentiate themselves from their competitors as far as the solutions go when they don't have it all. They're not, the control companies or the camera companies aren't providing holistic solutions. They're partnering with all these. So everybody's still trying to figure everybody out, and they're kind of looking at one another, trying to figure out, well, how do we make ourselves stand out?
Absolutely. And that's where commoditization happens. Because right. If I don't have something as a manufacturer that defines a reason why all of these rooms should be standardized, because if it's really just a soundbar with a USB and somebody comes in and plugs in their laptop and there's no differentiator, that becomes what is the best deal today, which is something we've seen in markets like projection and other things have happened as it's commoditized. Nobody is really necessarily differentiating on the small room projection. And very much like projection used to be the revenue driver of the AV industry, this unified communication has been the revenue driver of the AV industry for a large part of the last 10 to 12 years. And if that's going to fall off to commoditization, then that really could start to hurt some of the traditional AV channel.
Well, let me kind of back that up for a second, because Paul, you hit on something, and Craig, you brought it back together too. That middle ground. And here's the thing. So 10 years ago, this was late 2000s. We put in a system it was a research facility for the community college I worked for. It was a traditional video conferencing system. I'm not going to say which one because I'm going to use numbers. Again, this is 10 years ago. We spent $20,000 on a physical piece of hardware and the first year of service, the service agreement. 20 grand 10 years ago, where to accomplish that, and I understand what you guys are saying, where there's got to be a middle ground, but you can't, they can't sustain that $20,000 mark, because the vast majority of these folks, we can get a Zoom light. I mean, we're using Zoom, but you can get a Zoom license for 10 or 20 bucks. You can get, InFocus has a video, a soft codec videos. I mean, lots of folks have soft codecs, but to get to that secondary where it doesn't have to be, the look and feel of being in a real room. But you're right, Paul, having the auto echo cancellation, the AEC, built into it, which some of these soft codecs don't have and they're not very good at.
But all of the new soundbars do.
But here's the thing, you've got to have that what is that middle ground price point? Is it 5 grand? Is it 10?
One. $800. No, I mean, that's what you're really talking about here is, and it really, a lot of it comes down to pan tilt zoom. So I've got a very expensive, because it's a system pull, but Vadio pan tilt zoom camera in my office. But you don't necessarily need pan tilt zoom in a certain size space. So if 90% of the spaces are 8 or fewer people, I can cover it with a 1 or 2 microphones or a well-designed soundbar front-facing microphone set or some sort of microphone that comes out to the table. And now what you're actually seeing is we no longer have to have a mechanical pan tilt zoom camera, because in reality, although great, you're coming out with 4K cameras for conferencing, nobody needs a conference in 4K for a meeting. But the really interesting thing that happens is now that we have these very big sensors, 8K and more camera sensors, is I no longer need a mechanical pan-tilt zoom because I have this big frame and I just move my 720 around and scale to what I need. And that lowers that price. So that virtual pan-tilt zoom is going to drive down the price because it's the same sensor, you know, it's in your iPhone or something. It's being mass produced for the consumer industry. They'll be able to do those pan-tilt zooms. And then echo cancellation, which if you're dealing with, the reason you see the low cost in the speaker phones, the next generation of desktop speakerphone with USB or whatever else into it, or soundbars, is because the math involved, if you don't have to make calculations as to where the microphones are compared to the speakers, drives down your processing. Well, the biggest cost of echo canceling is constantly sampling and understanding what that room looks like. Yeah. Because I could have different mics muted on and off. If that turns into a fixed environment, I now can drive down that echo canceling into the same sort of chipsets that are built for phones and headsets and that sort of thing. And that price just can drop through the floor as soon as the mass market companies get into it and the prosumer companies. You know, if Logitech is getting into the AV soundbar system, they're not setting that price point at $5,000. They're going to set that price point at what they can get. But their idea is not, I'm going to sell 1,000 of these at a 60% margin. Theirs is, I'm going to sell 1,000,000 of them at a 6% margin, or whatever that math works out to be, because that market is now there for that.
Yeah, and then I think on the backside of that, then you have, you know, so your cost is twofold. It's hardware, and then there's also the licensing cost for the soft codec that you're going to run through that system. And I think the interesting point you brought up was, you know, if we can remove the PTZs, how does that change the user experience? And how many rooms have I sat in with conference with people that have been in the, have used the same room over and over again, but still can't use the pan tilt zoom?
As well as now that I have a virtual pan tilt zoom and it's highly integrated with a microphone array, then I've got two modes, right? Follow the speaker or wide, because once I can now integrate and I'm already doing that processing as to the microphones, I now know who is talking or if there are multiple talkers and can intelligently pick that, along with things like face detection. And suddenly I just put my meeting in auto mode and my two modes are whether I want it switching around or I want to see everybody. And, right. And you know, I always said that when I did interface design, that the perfect user interface only has two buttons, on and off doesn't actually have to be hooked up to anything. And these integrated units, in addition to driving down cost, do that. And once again, this is a professional AV show. Where does that leave the traditional AV manufacturers and integration channel in that value chain and the way they structure the way they make money? Because they're not going to... I personally don't believe that Crestron, AMX, Extron, Vadio is going to come out and dominate successfully with a piece of collaboration software.
I think that drives into a licensing, you know, a long licensing discussion. Yeah. But I think at the same time, the sales pitch really is much different. You're no longer really selling on a spec sheet. You're not selling on, well, we have the best hardware. You're selling on, we have the best user experience.
That's something that Vix
has been asking them to do for years.
And that's absolutely true. And what I found, and when I was with Harman, I got to see the vast majority of the big win-loss reports. So when a $1 million deal is out there and gets awarded, whether you win or lose, some report goes up as to why you won or lost. I did not see in the last 2 years a major win or loss that the reason was how the AV performed. Quite frankly, we have hit good enough. Same thing with projectors. What allowed projectors to commoditize, because for years it was, what's the best projector I can get for $10,000? And then they hit that magic 3,500 lumens at 1080p, and it became, what's the best 3,500 lumen 1080 price I can get for 3,500 lumen 1080p? Because I don't need to go any further. It's so when you hit this good enough, it allows for commoditization. And what staves that off within a manufacturer is the secondary. It's user experience. It's network security, which I think we'll touch on later. It's how can I manage and deploy? I'm a big company with 2,000 of these things. How am I not running around? Tim, as a university tech manager, I'm sure when you left, you were still doing classroom walks. Every morning, you're doing classroom walks. What does that cost equivalent in large organizations to do the classroom walks or equivalent of prep? So how can I bring in the management? So all these non-functional things are actually more important than AV to the total value proposition. And so we're going to see this huge dynamic shift. And I am unconvinced that the manufacturers get that yet.
That actually helps us transition into our next story. Yeah. Which will be our last story. We spent a lot of time on this, but I love it. It's fantastic. Commercial integrators is detailing our old buddy Josh Schrago, who is on his way to becoming a lawyer. So he's spending a lot of time looking at California law. There's a new one, though, that says that may very well impact some of the products that we all spec and know and love. Back in 2018, quote unquote, the California state legislature passed SB 327. In summary, the bill requires that the manufacturers of connected devices provide appropriate security measures for any connected device they make. In California, let's be frank here. I can name off the top of my head three or four that are in California that work and live and breathe inside the AV industry that this will impact. So Craig, we'll start with you. Paul, we'll get you as well. How is this going to impact not just the folks in California, but all those outside in the rest of the 49 states and honestly, globally?
Well, it's going to impact the deployment and the operation of all of the, not just AV, but IoT industry greatly. And I think this is really interesting from a standpoint of, I think this is a problem that absolutely has to be addressed by the industry and by the professionals and, you know, maybe by legislation. I don't know if that's necessarily the best means to do it. What's interesting to me in the article was the legislation says appropriate, and what is appropriate? You know, there's no key definition there, and that's where the industry picks up and standards pick up as to what appropriate actually is. But internet security is important. I myself have secondhand experiences where, in this case, it's surveillance systems have been held ransom because integrators have not changed passwords or made passwords strong enough. And in the particular story, the experience that we've had, it happened twice to the same system because of integrators not fixing passwords. And that's not necessarily a dig on integrators, but something has to be done to manage passwords and to manage access to these internet connected devices, especially as we see a flood of new devices, both in the AV industry and the IoT industry, hit the market and start coming from the consumer side into the commercial side. So,
not just that, but the way I read this was, yes, that's probably where they were headed was the consumer side. But there were several as early as 98 or 99. I started seeing an RJ45, a network jack, on the back of an AV piece of AV equipment. And now you can, a bunch of us are going to ISE. You can walk that show floor. And I'm going to conservatively say 95% of those devices are going to have some sort of network connectivity. some of which don't even need it. But you know, they're going to have it for various reasons.
So, and I think, I don't know what the solution to this is, you know, frankly, but, you know, and a big part of it may be from an AV industry is does this device actually need to connect to the network? And what is, because the management of passwords just goes, you know, I can't even imagine how you would manage the passwords on, unless you have some sort of application, again, managing the passwords for multiple devices across an industry. But the deployment of, you know, just from, you know, a deployment and then from a maintenance, you know, an ongoing maintainability standard. And what does the strength of the password actually then look like when you're doing that?
Yeah.
You know, because it's not just feasible. It's really not feasible. So.
All right, Mr. Zeeby, how's this going to impact all of us?
Well, I'm really curious if this law has teeth, because I broke down and read the law, and so there's interesting things that the title shall not be construed to provide a basis for private right of action. The attorney general, a city attorney, a city council, or district attorney shall have exclusive authority to enforce this title. And not being a law student, I can't figure out what the possible penalties are. And quite frankly, I can't tell from it if it's manufactured in California or if it means any manufacturer for sale in California, because it ties into some commerce things. So there's a lot of clarification as to what's the potential teeth to this. But in reality, the bar they set for appropriate is really low, which is essentially says if it is connected to a network that has internetworking, so automatically things like AVB are out. There is no internetworking within AVB. The management part might be, so you have to do it. But anything that's a layer two, not going. But so let's assume it's IP that's got to have a password, and that when I log into it, I change the password. That's the bar. That's an incredibly low bar.
But it's a bar we get to hit in the industry, though.
Well, it's a bar that I've been advocating for a long time. I've actually been advocating for a long time.
What I'm saying is you go out and you put a PO in for a number of AV devices. It's a bar we still haven't hit yet.
Oh, no, absolutely. And quite frankly, to tell a story, when I first came to AMX, we had just come out pre-purchasing SVSI, we'd come out with an H.264 encoder, Gen 1 IPTV. And I was playing with it. I went back to the product manager and said, I can't figure out how to change the password. And he said, yeah, about that. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, you can't change the password. I said, what do you mean? I said, well, I brought that up to the engineering team and they said, the spec just said it had to have a username and password, not that you had to be able to change them. This is 5 years ago. We've progressed past that in many cases, but we haven't. And as far as the industry addressing it, as of Infocom 2018, Infocom has AVIXA has a recommended practice for security in networked AV systems. So if you're an AVIXA member, you can get a hold of this. If you're listening to this and aren't an AVIXA member, you probably know one and could get a hold of it. This is stage one. This is essentially, these are the best practices that we recommend everyone does. One of the very first things is change the passwords.
Yeah.
In reality, the way you handle passwords is, I'm a strong advocate for the AV group should not be in the username and password business. That the IT group is already in the username and password business, and using the single sign-on and the groups and roles of the IT group are the appropriate way to do it. That way, if somebody leaves, they're taken out because they don't have email, can't log on the network. They're also taken out. It's very easy to add people in. It's the way everything else is handled. If you work for a corporation, you probably don't realize it, but you're a member of 20 different groups that allow you different permissions, all based on the way you log into your computer. So that's the way that the world expects for these things to work, and that's the way manufacturers have to go.
Yeah, and I think that as we move forward, as these systems become, you know, more prevalent, and or as, you know, and maybe to this day we just the you know, a system getting taken over by a hacker or by, you know, an intruder just aren't large enough to make news. But I think at some point AV integrators or manufacturers are going to start to see negative consequences if their systems are compromised. And, you know, running through Active Directory or some other to keep this going is the way that we may have to,
right?
You know, we may have to go.
I think these laws should be in place. Quite frankly, if you sell to the federal government, technically these laws are in place, but they're not enforced, quite frankly, I think this is one of the major market opportunities, because combination of industry and legal requirements doing it, and the customers demanding it, and that is the type of differentiation that can allow an AV manufacturer to go through. Unfortunately, the vast majority today do security theater and implement a single thing like, oh, we force you to change your password, we're now secure. And that's not how security works. It's a continuum, and nothing is ever secure if it's turned on and attached to a network. It's just how secure does it need to be for that particular customer, and I'm constantly looking at it. And I have not seen the AV industry at all step up to that level of diligence that is, quite frankly, required to play in this brave new world, and has been for 10 years. And that's going to come home to roost at some point.
Yeah, the educational side of it, I believe, is very large. Is making your clients aware and understand what it is. What are the devices that we're putting on your network actually doing? What are they connecting to? What are they calling out to? And who can call into them?
And that's becoming much more important to them, because they are under frameworks. So if I'm under PCI DSS, you know, payment card, I take credit cards, there's audits in there. If I'm an ISO 97000 company, I am subject to audits that look very much like financial audits that include ISO 27000 security principles, which go through everything that touches the network, but also goes in even to the security and privacy of what your vendors are providing. So this is really becoming required, and it really has more to do with insurance companies and financial liability, because if I want to have my company insured, that insurance company is going to make sure that I'm not open up to liability. And one of the big liabilities is coming, some of these big payouts have to do with security and data privacy, and everybody gets scooped up in that net when accountants and insurance companies are involved.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's actually going to do us for time. I'm going to put some links out through the ISO 27000 though, Paul, so people can check that out as well. Gentlemen, thank you so much. We could talk about this for hours, and we actually had one more story, which we're not even going to get to. So we're going to push that off till next month. Mr. Craig Mertz from HGA, thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the time.
How do people find you?
You can find me at on LinkedIn at Craig Mertz and at HGA.com.
All right, very good. Craig Mertz from HGA. Master Paul Zeely, it's always good, sir, to see you. How do people get a hold of you if they want to?
Paul Zeely on LinkedIn, or by the time this goes up, there should be some sort of presence at avcoip.com.
All right, very good, Paul Zeely. My name is Tim Albright. For more information about us and AV Nation, go by the website avnation.tv, avnation.tv. I mentioned the fact that we are headed to ISC, so you can check out all that coverage starting February 5th through the 8th at the website as well. So all that and more at avnation.tv, avnation.tv.